How are we? Good, good. Thanks for coming out. It's been like just the most horrible weather in history for the last week, and then the one time it's nice outside, Sunday night. So thanks for being people who love Jesus more than that. You are going to get rewards in heaven for showing up on such a beautiful night. I can't confirm or deny that, actually, but I appreciate you guys coming out. Like Adrian said, we're in a series called The Struggle's Real, and what we're talking about is how God is using the struggles in our lives to shape who we are. And so we're talking about some common struggles that we've experienced as human beings. And last week we talked about money struggles. Adrian talked about that, how God gives us what we have for us to be more generous, for us to steward it for the glory of God, for his kingdom, not for us, not like the world where we just kind of hoard stuff. Week before that, I talked about fear and anxiety, the struggle of fear, how we are called to overcome fear with faith, and that God actually meets us in that fear. He meets us in the anxiety. He doesn't take us out of it. He meets us in the very hardest places and walks with us, and that's why we don't have to fear. So this week, like he talked about, we're talking about relationships. And, you know, I know in this room there's probably every relationship status represented. There's married people, there's single people, there's probably divorced people, there's engaged people, and there's the Facebook, it's complicated, you know, tab, if you know what I'm talking about, where you click on that when you don't really know what you are. You just put it's complicated with somebody. I remember when Facebook was just first getting started, and I was in college, and how big of a deal it was when me and my wife started dating to say, okay, we're Facebook official, you know? You remember that when you're dating or some of you young folks, when you first started kind of getting in a relationship and you finally pushed that button that said, hey, I am with that person, and how like everybody's like, ooh, you're official. No, it's real. It's on Facebook. It's an actual thing now. You know, 15% of Americans now, 15% use the internet to find their significant other. Use online dating. 5% of Americans who are married now met online. Anybody, just out of curiosity, anybody here meet their significant other online? Look at there, see? Boom. See, we got one right there, proving my point. I planted them. I told them to sit there. It was great. So if you haven't found that, so there's lots of options out there. I decided this week to look around and see some of the different opportunities we have. First one up here that you can go and find some dates on, dateagolfer.com. So if you, you know, want to go check out that backswing and see if you could find that lady to or that man to come and to golf with you, if you got that. Next up, we got this. We got 420 singles. So if you want to see how high your love can get, you can go to this. Did anybody meet on 420 singles in this room that want to admit that? No? Okay. Uh-huh. Not legal in Kentucky, so hopefully not. Then we have gluten-free singles. That's extremely specific. You'd figure that you could just talk to the person about that once you meet them on the regular websites, but whatever it takes, gluten-free. And then we have our favorites. Anybody know the jingle? You don't have to be lonely. Sing it with me if you know this. At farmersonly.com. Brilliant. Brilliant advertising. It's on the Super Bowl. I mean, it's one of the most awkward commercials I've ever experienced before. But, I mean, there are other ones that I could not put on screen because they were way weirder and ones that I would probably regret talking about. But there's lots of different opportunities now to get online and find your significant other. And you know, we make fun of these sites, but in reality, it's the oldest, literally the oldest problem in the world is that we're dealing with. Because we got Genesis 1 and 2 at the beginning of the Bible, and God creates the world. He speaks it into existence. He creates everything from aardvarks to the sun and the moon, and then he creates human beings, and he says, it's good. It's good. And then in Genesis 2, he says this very kind of startling statement, because up to this point, he just keeps repeating this phrase, it's good, it's good, it's very good at his creation. He's speaking that out, and then all of a sudden, in verse 18 of chapter 2, it says, then the Lord God said, it is not good for the man to be alone. You were created for relationship. You were created for the kind of relationship that was founded in intimacy, unhindered intimacy. Intimacy with God and intimacy with one another. Knowing and being known. Loving and being loved. You were created for intimacy with God and with others. But then Genesis 3 happens and sin enters the picture and it distorts intimacy. It distorts our relationship both with God and with others. And so as a result, that relationship is fractured. We no longer see reality and relationship in the same way. We start looking for what we can't find in others, what we try to find in God. So we start kind of putting on people this weight of I have to find the totality of my intimacy, the totality of my identity in another person, in a relationship. So whether you're male or female, single, married, dating, divorced, we're all dealing with, everyone in this room tonight is dealing with the fallout of the brokenness in our relationships. Every one of us. There's not one of us here tonight that aren't experiencing some type of brokenness in relationships. And that's just reality. It doesn't matter what your status is. In his book, The Four Loves, C.S. Lewis, he talks about these relationships and intimacy. He says this statement. He says, we are born helpless, and as soon as we are fully conscious, we discover loneliness. We need others physically, emotionally, intellectually. We need them if we are going to know anything, even ourselves. You know, the book gets its name because there's four different words for love in the Greek. There's only one word for love in English. That would be love. And that's why there's several awkward moments where within 2 minutes of one another, you can say, oh, I love my wife and I love that burrito. And there's not really any kind of difference. I mean, maybe it's a really good burrito, but still, that's not an even thing there. So the Greek language recognizes that there's different types of loves. That's what this book that C.S. Lewis wrote is about. How we differentiate between and understand the different types of loves that the Greek language talks about. So we're going to look at these real quick. The four words for love in the Greek and how they're different and what this means for us. The first one is storge. Say with me, storge. 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 That's a love for family. That's your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister. Lewis calls it affection. It's the love that you have for family. So you can kind of call or text your mom. Maybe you want to do that right now. Pull your phone out and text your mom. Say, Mom, I storge you. And see what kind of response you get from that. I really storge you. So you could do that tonight and just don't call me or send me emails because it's going to be awkward if you do that. Second one is phileo, which is friendship love. It's where we get the word from Philadelphia, the brotherly love, friendship that we have between one another. So if you have buddies, you have girlfriends that you hang out with, that's the kind of love you have for them, phileo love, as you're hanging out with them. In the Bible, we have a great example. This is David and Jonathan, who in the Old Testament, they're just close friends. It's a close, intimate friendship. It's that guy. You know, you ever had like a really close best friend that like you just get them. They get you and you get them. That's what phileo love is. The third love is eros love. That's the love that's focused on sexuality and romance. And so when we're falling in love that we're talking about there is that eros love. It's where we get the word erotic. It's the sexual expression of love. And then finally, love number four is agape. Agape is the most prominent love that we see in the New Testament. When you hear love in the New Testament, it's talking about agape love. Now we need to break this word down because it's huge for us. Agape love is unconditional love. Agape love is love that does not change when circumstances change. All the rest of these loves that we've mentioned before, storge love, phileo love, eros love, all of these loves can be swayed by circumstances. They can be shaken by circumstances. They can be shaken by brokenness in relationships. But real, true agape love that the Bible talks about is unshakable. It does not go away when things get hard. It stays. It is a faithful, steadfast love. That's what we're talking about when we talk about agape love. It's agape love alone that restores the intimacy that we long for in relationships with God and with others. And so if you have storge love that's not rooted in agape love, the storge love is just going to get broken. The same thing with eros. The same thing with phileo love. All of those loves cannot bear the weight of our brokenness. Only agape love has the power to transform our relationships and the rest of the loves that we experience in our lives. But when you hear the word intimacy, when I'm talking about intimacy tonight, which one of those four do you think of first? It's not a rhetorical question. Someone answer me. Yeah. You think of eros. You think of that. Because in our culture, that's the only thing we know of intimacy is the eros, love. Our culture has elevated eros to the highest place above all the other loves. In our Western culture, eros love is the unfulfilled life without no real hope of intimacy if you do not have that kind of romantic love. I think about shows like The Bachelor and The Bachelorette that are, I'm sorry, ladies, if you like this, or men, I don't want to, you know, be sexist with that, but that drudging up of just this, the fakeness of that eros love that they're presenting week in and week out, that this is going to be the fulfillment of my life if I find this guy that I just met 2 weeks ago and he's the one, even though I've only spent a total of 15 minutes with him. It's the elevation of that kind of understanding of love that's where I get intimacy. And the hard thing about this for Christians is if we only know intimacy in the context of eros love, and the Bible says that we're only supposed to express intimacy, physical intimacy, in a marriage relationship, then if you are not married in the church, or you're divorced, or you're dating, you can't do anything at all to find those kind of relationships. You often feel left out. You often feel ostracized because, you know, if you've been to church before, people talk about marriage all the time. Nobody ever talks about singles. Nobody ever talks about, very rarely, about dating, about the realities of life outside of being married. I had a blog this week on our website about singles, about how they're not second-class Christians. We've a lot of times treated single people in the church like second-class people, like they can't really belong. We don't talk about them. We kind of just keep them over there. We put them in their single groups, and that way they can kind of stay. Well, then they get married, and they move up to this reality of real spiritual maturity, which is marriage. And there's a real problem with that, honestly. The perfect man, the perfect reality of humanity, was Jesus, who was single and never had sex. That kind of says something, doesn't it? That's an important thing for us to understand. So the struggle I know single people have been within the church is that if I want real intimacy like we're talking about, then I either have to disobey God or I have to get married. And so if you walk in that tension for long enough, it's tough. Because our world has elevated and says the only way you find intimacy is with eros love. And I don't want to say that with judgment. I know there's people out there that have made mistakes in relationships and have gone after that kind of intimacy. We often look upon those folks with judgment because it's not what God designed, but we have to be compassionate and understanding to at least know that what they're seeking out is something that's very human. They're seeking intimacy. They're seeking something they're made for. We look for those places of intimacy apart from God, every single one of us, and we need to have compassion on those who are sometimes straying outside of God's confines of marriage and know that, yes, it's sin, but man, they're looking for some way to not feel so lonely, to experience intimacy. And that's why it's so vital for us to recover intimate relationships of every single kind within the church, not just marriage. We need agape love to be the love that anchors everything we do. And if there's one thing in particular I've sensed in this church, just to talk frankly with you for a second, is that we need to learn how to foster intimate friendships. I, as I was studying for this week and thinking through this, thinking about how little we have invested sometimes in teaching people how to be friends. I get a sense as a pastor here that we need to learn to move beyond being an acquaintance with one another, of just kind of sitting in rows and learn to actually foster these kind of relationships. Proverbs 17:17 says, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for a difficult time. Friends love with agape love, even in the difficult times. It's a love that transcends our circumstances. So in this church right now, you should be investing in friendships that stand the test of time. And if you don't have any close, intimate friendships, I know we're only about 3.5 months in, so we got time, but if we're not investing in some type of intimate friendship with other people in this church, my question is, why not? Is it time? Is it effort? Is there something that's standing in the way? Or are we so focused on ourselves that we don't actually have time to invest in those kind of friendships beyond just sitting beside one another and walking out the door every Sunday night? I think this is particularly true with us as guys. We have a really hard time developing close relationships. We are so good at keeping this just surface level. Let's just quote movies. Let's talk about sports. Let's laugh together. And then that's it. And so we spend the rest of, you know, we spend years and years walking with people. And then you realize after a while, I'm not really friends with these people. I just like to laugh and talk about stuff with them. They don't know me. I don't know them. And on the inside, us guys, we're just afraid to let you know that we're really lonely. That we want those kind of relationships. We want those kind of connections. And ladies, I know it's hard for you too. It's hard for similar reasons, and it's also hard for different reasons that us guys don't get to experience. It's hard to build new relationships and deeper relationships with women sometimes. There's struggles there. I'm not going to pretend to sit up here and tell you what they are. I'm not a lady. You know exactly what that is, but we have to move beyond that level of surface friendships and move into some real agape, intimate friendships within this church if we want to not only grow spiritually, but grow as a church. People come to church for a lot of different reasons, but the reason they stay is because they make a friend. More than sermon series, more than how good our worship is, and our worship is great, more than how beautiful the graphics are, more than how our website is cool, more than our Facebook page, more than anything, the thing that grows people and the thing that grows churches is friendships, is people inviting friends, is people building real friendship relationships. That is what actually grows us. And as we've developed the value of diversity around here, we want to see how we also build friendships with people who are not like us, people who are not our race, people who are not our background, people that don't have much in common with us. Doing the hard work of building friendships with those people actually grow us more than building friendships with people who are just like us. How many friends do you have with someone that votes the opposite of you? And I'd say, why? Because the agape love that Jesus is talking about here would actually reach beyond that, would step across that line. It says in John 15 that no one has greater love than this, than to lay down his life for his friends. True agape love is always, always, always sacrificial. If you look at your life right now, and you see a lack of close friends, it may not be because everybody's mean or nobody's taking that time to say hi to you, or it may be because you and I haven't counted the cost and we've not sacrificed what we need to build and develop those kind of friendships. Friendship is an investment. And if we're to really invest in something that matters, if we're just investing in our own world, then we shouldn't be surprised if we spend our lives without close relationships, without close friendships, because we're investing everything in us and not other people. I know we talk about them a lot around here. The other day I heard somebody say to me, listen, I think you're running the Citigroup thing into the ground, and that made me know that I'm doing it right. I'm talking about them enough. Citigroups, what we're doing around here in our Citigroups, this is your best chance of developing relationships, developing friendships that are deeper than the surface level. You can sit by one another in this room week in and week out, and you won't get that. You just won't. And Citigroups are designed to grow those kind of relationships, grow those kind of friendships together as you join one another on mission. I mean, My city group is, that's my tribe. That's my people. And those are my friendships. And even now, as I've prepared this week, I've thought how much even the relationships I have in my city groups, how I think God's calling me to go deeper there. Like, I don't go far enough in my relationships with those people. You'll see, I threw a picture up here. This is from Adrian's city group that you can see there. You can spot a few people there. But they meet on Tuesday nights. Ours meet on Thursday nights. Brian and Kathy and Walt Vicky, theirs meets on Wednesdays every other week. They're starting at the brewery, and they're kind of making the rounds there. So that's another opportunity to get connected. And we want to see more. We dream of seeing more of these city groups develop over time, not because we're trying to expand as a market. We want people to feel like they have a place where they can belong and have those friendships. I don't want to grow because I'm looking around at the other churches and thinking, man, we got to catch up. I want to grow because I know how many lonely people are out there. I know how many people are out there that I encounter that do not have hope. And then why we want more city groups is because city groups have the best opportunity where people may not walk in this door on a Sunday, but they may walk in your home, or they may meet you at the brewery, or they may meet you out serving in the community garden or at the Dunbar Center. They may meet you there, and that might be the connection that makes that relationship that goes deeper than the level that we're talking about here. So in Acts 2, the passage we looked at earlier, that's the kind of the prototypical understanding of the early church of what it looks like when the Holy Spirit falls. That first verse there in 42 says, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship. That word fellowship in the Greek is koinonia. That's another one. Say that with me. Koinonia. Koinonia is a very, very important word for us. Koinonia, that word means intimate community. It means the closest community you can get. That is a group of people that have moved beyond the surface and have literally become family together. That word, it could not be any stronger of a bond of what it's talking about there. And it says they devoted themselves to it. Koinonia didn't happen by accident. They didn't get in a room one day and it's like, all of a sudden, we're close. Koinonia is fought for. Koinonia is invested in. Koinonia does not take 2 months. It takes 2 years. It takes time for us to invest in relationships that matter over time. It's always going to be an investment. A lot, agape love there in Acts 2 was reigning. But in that reality of the early church, you saw different races, you saw different relationship statuses, and all of them were coming together, experiencing that kind of intimacy in the church. They did not have to be married to experience intimate relationships, to experience agape love. That was happening right in the middle of everything. Agape love should be available to everybody that walks through these doors. Unconditional love should be something that people are met with when they come through here and when they come into our city groups, no matter what their background is. And it may be messy. And you can look at them and say, I'm just as much of a mess. But agape is beginning to transform me, and I want to invite you to let it transform you too. Jesus, speaking in John 13, he says, I give you a new command. Love one another. That word there, agape one another. Just as I have agaped you, you are also to agape, love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you agape one another. What the world needs to see more than anything is a love that moves beyond surface level relationships. People can walk in church and know when it's fake. You know? You ever got that sense you walk in and it's like kind of like, oh, hi, yeah, good to see you. Yeah, I'll see you next week. I'll never talk to you. Or like, going down to church. I remember the church I grew up in, like, somebody would, you know, they'd shake hands. And these people were mad at one another for, like, 30 years. 30 years of being angry at one another and pretending every single Sunday that they didn't hate one another. Ugh, it's exhausting. People that walk through these doors, fake radars are always up. They can tell when relationships aren't real. And what a tragedy it would be if people walk in these doors or walk in these city groups and they begin to notice that, man, I don't know that these people really like one another. Maybe they like being around here, but do they love one another? I think that's what Jesus is talking about when he says this. They'll know your disciples by how you love one another. When agape love is reigning, people know. People know when that's reigning in our lives together. I think this is really the challenge for us as a church, as we're growing, is learning to how to develop these relationships and letting agape begin to grow us together into an intimate koinonia fellowship where we're at. So as we close tonight, this is kind of a practical message, and I want to ask three practical questions about where you're at with friendships, within this church, with the outside the church, wherever it may be. I want to ask these three very practical questions that I want us to kind of think upon as we're moving forward here. Number one is, who do I need to pursue? Who's that person that I know I'm not really close with, I think I should be, or I feel like maybe God's saying I need to grow in that friendship? Who do I need to seek out? Who do I need to pursue to begin growing an intimate friendship, a real life friendship with? Second question is this: who do I need to encourage? Who do I need to step out and say, thank you for being a friend? Travel down the road and back again. It's Golden Girls, guys. It's Golden Girls. Thank you. Thank you, Melanie, for being the only one who got my Golden Girls joke. But seriously, who do you need to reach out to and encourage? That has been a friend to you. I thought of a guy this week in my life named Steve. He didn't even live in the country. He lives in Australia. But Steve is always pursuing me. Even when I'm not pursuing him, Steve is always saying, how are you doing? Like, how's your wife? How are you doing as a dad? Like, and he lives in Sydney, Australia, and he does such a good job of saying, I prioritize your friendship enough that I'm actually going to pursue you. Who is that for you? Who do you need to go out of your way to encourage and to seek out and to build and develop that friendship? And the final question is always the toughest question, is who do you need to forgive? There's a chance that you're not developing relationships with a certain person or a certain group of people because you have some unforgiveness that's standing in the way. Someone hurt you. Someone is done something that's broken your trust. Maybe you've put yourself out there and it's hurt. Who is that you need to, in this moment, say, as hard as it is, I know agape love is bigger than my hurt, and I'm going to try to forgive. I'm going to seek out forgiveness. I'm praying tonight that we are honest with ourselves about this. It's tough to face these things. A pastor friend of mine says to me, and this is a statement that stuck with me for a long time, but God will only meet us in reality. And what he means by that is that God won't meet us in the fantasy world that we make ourselves out to be in. He will only meet us where we actually are. And so these questions are a helpful understanding to say, where am I actually at in my relationships right now? What's reality? And God, please meet me there. So I want to pray for us. We're going to take communion and sing a little bit more, but let's just take some time here now. Why don't we bow our heads, close our eyes, and let's just take some time.